Then
the Zeppelin was going overhead. You were in the signaller's office.
In the signaller's office, that's right. Well, the post office rung up and said, take action. Zepp's approaching London. I thought, what the devil shall I do? Anyway, I thought, I won't say nothing. I saw the Zepp come over, all lit up, you know, it was. Of course, there were no anti-aircraft guns or anything like that. None at all. And well, they bombed Yarmouth, but they didn't get to London. They turned back, I suppose, and that was that. So but the next one I saw, when I was home on leave, I saw that one come down at Potter's Bar. But that wasn't lit up. That was that captain, I forget his name now.
Did you ever find out what action you should have taken?
No, I never asked. I shouldn't have been in there. I shouldn't have been in. I wasn't supposed to be in there. But chap asked me, all in good humour like, he said, can I let you be in the office for an evening? And I said, yeah, I've got nothing to do. Oh, I was a servant then as well, you see. And I said, I've got nothing to do. So I went in there, sat in there, and reading the paper, and then this phone message came, take action. And I was stalled then. I thought, oh, I don't know what to do, so best thing's to say nothing, I can't get blamed then.
Going back a minute, Mr. White.
Yeah.
You told us that about a month before you shipped out to France, they took your horses away from the cavalry. Did this suggest to you that you might be going to France fairly soon?
Well, it seemed like it. You see, although we were missing draft after draft, see, the poor old infantry, they were clicking a lot, going out every day, as you might say. But they were leaving us till last.
Had you heard anything about how the cavalry had got on in France?
Yes, we heard on the Somme. They got carved up. See, the horses could... barbed wire was supposed to have been broken, but it wasn't. That was after 7 days' bombardment. And, of course, when the horses got there, they were all tangled up in the wires and that. And that was about the last battle they fought. What they only kept one. Look, see, called the heavy, heavy cavalry, dragoons. That was about the only mob they kept.
Did this have an effect on morale in your unit when you found out that the cavalry was...
Well, it did, really, you see. Yes, it certainly did. But we never knew what they took them away for, the horses. Because they were all raw when we got them first. They come from Canada, Canadian Broncos. They were... When we was at Blicklin, we had to take our tunics off, just the riding breeches and putties and that, and have a little short stick to whip them up whatever. But they've all got no shoes on. But I had one jump on top of me head here, split that down there.
Yes, you've still got the scar there.
Eh?
You've still got the marks there.
Oh, probably. They put me in hospital for a fortnight. Instead of going home on leave, they said, go fortnight's holiday when you come out of hospital. I went back to Ely in the old tap, Ely Tap. I had a couple of nice daughters there. And it's the Mrs. Smith that kept the tap. See, the officers were in the hotel, and the tap was like across the yard where they kept all the horses and one another. And Mrs. Smith, she was the landlady. See, Tom Smith, he was the hostiller, as they call them, or something or other.
Hostler.
I said, horses and that. And he used to be in charge of it, and she used to be in charge of the tap. Well, me and another tap officer, forget his name there. We slept in the room above. you see. And she would come out every morning with a glass of whiskey. You see, and that's where I first learned to drink whiskey. Of course, couldn't get any beer. See, but plenty of spirits.
So this is when you were convalescing from your injury from the horse?
Yes, yes. I was supposed to go, well, wasn't supposed to go home on leave, but I wrote and told my mother, I said, I shan't be coming home, I'm going to Ely again. And that woman came up and stayed a fortnight with us after the war. Not the daughter, though. That was punishment.
Okay. These Canadian horses that came over, were they wild? Were they brought up?
Yeah, they were.
And so you had to break them?
Well, for galloping, you couldn't train them properly. You see, some of them you couldn't get on even. They'd buck you and up you go and that's it. Down you come. It was all good sport, you know. Of course, Blickling Park was a great park. And if you wasn't careful, you know, had a bridle on, they did. If you wasn't careful and guiding, the trees, some of the trees were low like that. You had to duck right down like that. Of course, they all couldn't guide the horse anywhere else. Oh, yes, they were absolutely wild, they were. That was at the beginning of the war, they came over.
Yeah. Whose responsibility was it to break the horses?
Well, I suppose the colonel of the regiment, I suppose. I suppose they say, well, I've got about 500 horses that we're sending to you, want breaking in.
But who would actually do the work of breaking them in?
Well, if you could sit on it, you were in. Oh, a lot of chaps had broken arms and everything.
Well, so when you got a horse, you didn't know whether it had been broken in or not?
No, you see, they were out in the field there, and you just go and put a bridle on it, and, say your prayers, and up you go.
It sounds very dangerous.
But they weren't like a rodeo show or anything like that, but they were wild, you see. They had plenty of room to force themselves to sleep or something or other, or whatever they do when they run hard and then they fall down or something or other. But, it was all a bit of fun. I'd never been on horse, and they never had anybody on their back, I suppose, and they're a nice couple. Right. Yes. It was all what you might call a make-believe. You know, you were doing something that you knew nothing about at all. I didn't know the first thing about horse riding. But as I say, in 6 weeks I'll pass out of school and that.
Did it seem to have much to do with the war?
Hmm?
Did it seem to have much to do with the war?
With the war? Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's more of a holiday to me. Yeah, it was more of a holiday. Now I felt as well, as fit as anything. So that was all training for what I had to go through after, I suppose. And then, of course, if you're up at Ypres or anywhere like that, it was terrible.
Mm. Well, we'll certainly be talking about that later.
Yeah.
Now, at the moment, could we talk a bit now? You've mentioned that you met your regiment at London Bridge Station.
Yes.
Did you know what regiment that you were joining?
No, didn't know. See, we went out as the...
You were still in the city of London
Yeomanry. Yeah, it went out as that. But ETAPS was a marshalling yard, you see. When you got there, you didn't know where you were going.
Fine. Can you tell me a bit about the journey out? You met at London Bridge, so presumably you went down to Dover?
Dover. Yes, it all wired in when we got there.
What was it like on the train?
Well, it was all right on the train, but, I mean, where they put you down at Dover, it was all wired in, so you couldn't get out. See, once you were in that cage, you couldn't get out again.
Why had they done that?
Well, so you wouldn't get out. Yes.
What was morale like on the way down there? Because that was it.
Pretty fair. Yeah, well, it was until you got to ETAPS. And then... After that, you was all living rough, as you might say, canteens there, you and well, it was a massive place. Yeah. I would say in your regiment.
Can we talk a bit more about the actual journey out first before we get to Etown?
Yeah, well,
you got down to Dover.
Yeah, no, I forget the name of the boat I went on.
What sort of boat was it?
It was a Belgian boat, but I forget the name of it.
Yeah. Was it a ferry boat or?
Hmm?
Was it a proper
ferry
boat?
Oh, no, not a ferry boat. I suppose it was a boat that, well, it could have been a ferry boat.
How many of you got on it? Do you remember?
Oh, not only air, a lot. There was a marshalling yard there at Dover. That's why it was wired in, so you couldn't get out. Got over there all right, safe journey and that. And then, as I said, went to Boulogne, stayed there in the huts.
How long were you in Boulogne for?
Only 2 or 3 days, that's all. And then you went up to Etaps then. And then from there, had all your meals there. Then, just before you went to the regiment, they come round, inspected you. Anybody don't think they ought to go up the line. I thought, shall I go in there and say that? Underage. They laugh at me, perhaps. Anyway, I stayed in, didn't appeal to stop behind.
So you were a bit nervous when you got...
Well, I was, you see. I thought, oh, Christ, we're getting too near it now.
Was that a feeling that a lot of your friends had?
Yeah, well, that's right, yes. See, I thought, well, if I'd have been with them, I'd have been all right. Mm. But we were all sent to different regiments, you know. But my two mates, they went to the 18th Middlesex. You see, well, they got killed. And I told my cousin, I said, if I can get a horse and a car, I'll go along to their battalion, because they... were near our division, and the brigade canteen, that was down where they were. And I had a chit, you see, for 12 bottles of whiskey. You see, from the brigade office.
Well, where were you based then?
Eh?
Where were you based then?
Where were we then?
Never mind. Can you just tell me a bit more about Etaps?
Because Etaps? You know, it was a very, very depressing place. Mm. Of course, everything was hard there. I say, the breakfast and all that food was proper rough stuff.
What sort of food would you get? What would it be?
Well, you'd get bacon and that, you know, that wasn't cooked very well. Well, not like you were with your own regiment. You see, and you had to scramble for it. And if you wasn't in time, you had got none. But, well, everybody was glad to get away from there.
Were you living under canvas there?
No, in huts, Nissen huts.
Nissen huts? What were they like?
These round, like that.
Well, what were the conditions like in them? Were they comfortable?
Oh, yeah, well, you made them comfortable yourself, you see. You had a blanket and or two, I don't know which you were, either one or two blankets, and made your bed down. Then you were responsible for cleaning it in the morning.
Had you been issued with any additional kit before you left England?
All new kit. I had a brand new cardigan, lovely thing it was too, but I only kept that a fortnight. It was full of chats, and I slung it over the top when I got down to Lewes. But I expect I had to pay for it after. I don't know how much they stopped me at me leave when I was discharged. I know I only had about £17 to come.
When you were at ETAPS, what was the daily routine there? What would you do?
Doing nothing, just waiting.
You weren't doing any physical training or drill?
No, but there was a bull ring there. I went down there after, but not when we went out to France first.
So yes, just waiting to be told which unit you were going to?
Which unit to go to, yes. And my luck, though, when I got to the 12th Fusiliers, I'd only been in them about, a month or two, I suppose. Who should send for me? There's this Lieutenant Tanner. They drafted him to the 12th Fusiliers. And he asked the colonel there if I could go and look after him again. And I said yes. And that got me off a bombing raid.
Really?
I was picked out for a bombing raid. You know, volunteers, you.
Okay. So, let's go back a bit. You were at ETAPS for about 2 weeks.
No, 2 weeks, about 4 or 5 days, that was all.
And then you were shipped out to...
Lewes. Newly Means, that's right, Newly Means. That was just behind Lewes, you see. Lewes was the sector all round there.
What were your first impressions when you got to the front, when you got to Newly Means?
Well, I'm going to win it.
Single-handed?
Yeah. Yes, we were marched up in the dark to the dugouts and that. And the one I got, God, I mean, this water that high.
Well, about 2 feet deep.
About 18 inches anyway. And I was not going to sleep. Well, I'd always just been taking my socks off. But I didn't take anything off that night. And, they were rough dugouts, so... You know, when we went across the line, you know, through the wire and that, and went into German trenches, they were all concrete. But ours were just, pit props, they were.
So you marched up to the front at night.
Mm-hmm.
What were your impressions when you saw what it looked like in the morning? What did it look like?
Eh?
What were the trenches like?
Cool, knocked about. Oh, they were rough.
And how deep were they?
Ah, well, that varied. See, if they had a direct hit, they were flattened. And you had to go out in the morning revetting. That's building them up again, you see. But when I got to the where the chaps were in the front line, first bloke I met was another grocer next door to Lipton's Pegram's. He worked for Pegram's. And he said, hello, what are you doing? Well, I said to him, hello, what are you doing here then? He said, you went to see what you're doing here. Yeah. And they were under just a bit of canvas over the top of the... and sitting on the side of the trench.
You were sitting on the side of the trench?
Eh?
You were sitting on the side of the trench?
Well, you know, there's chaps on the fire step.
Oh.
And then... go down a bit and there's a bit more like what you'd lay against or sit down if you could and all that, waiting for something to happen. And it wasn't very long before it did happen too. But as I say, that was my first impression. I thought, well, I'm going to win this war. And but after a little while, I had another impression. I'd like to get out of this.
How long did it take before you changed your mind?
I didn't change it at all.
No,
I stuck it. Well, I tell you, I had my calling up papers out there sent out to me. I could have gone back to the White City if I'd liked. Rather, well, I got so far, I'll stick it out now.
How did you get to the trenches in the first
through
place?
Through communication trench. That might be about over a mile long in some places. Some places about 200 yards or something. So you go through like the pavement, as it would be, you go down, and then you walk along. And that communication trench was never straight. It was always like that, you see.
Well, zigzagged.
Yeah, zigzagged, yeah.
Was it the same sort of formation as the front line trenches?
Oh, no, you're facing a different way, you see. See, the communication trench would be like... One well-known one was Fos 10.
Mm-hmm.
That was at Lebrevis. So you come out at Lebrevis, then you get in the sepulchre pavement, then you walk down and then right the way through to the front line. But as I say, unless there was a strap on, it was all right.
Mm.
But if there was a strap on, he used to wallop them, call. Yeah, all the signal wires used to get busted up. Yeah.
So the trenches were in quite a state when you got to the
front.
Oh
yes, yeah.
Yeah. What was the countryside like? Was it flat or was it hilly?
All hill, shallows. But towards the front lines, all shallows.
Mm. Were there any woodlands? Were there any trees?
Oh, there were only stumps about that high.
About 3 feet high?
About that, yes. Oh, yes.
Were there any buildings?
What there were not much left. Went to a lovely town, Morocco. Supposed to be a model town. And we come out there to rest. And the Germans, they wouldn't touch it. And that's where they caught a spy there, the day after we went there, up in the scaffolding up there. And they caught him.
What happened to him?
Oh, they shoot a spy. I expect they had a court-martial and was killed. They never let them go. But as I say, when we was at Newly Means, we used to go down to these estaminets and have a drink, and the old piano, you put a penny in, you get a Mademoiselle from Armentières or something like that.
What was available in the estaminets in terms of food and drink?
What
was available in the estaminets in terms of food and drink?
Dance with the girls and all the rest of it.
Yeah, just dance with them?
Eh?
Just dance with them?
Just dance. Oh, well, they had the licensed red lamps, if you wanted anything like that.
Yeah.
We never had enough money. The others did, but we didn't.
Well, it was expensive.
Eh?
They were expensive.
Well, they weren't expensive, but because the Aussies were getting double pay, they got the best chance of engaging the couples and all the rest of it. Oh, yes.
But the British couldn't afford it.
Well, 8 bob a week, good Lord. And your rations. A sort of see for the vin rouge, vin blanc. You used to buy a sort of vin blanc, you know, to sweeten it. And grenadine. You used to buy 8 of them.
What about beer? Could you get beer there?
Oh, yes. It wasn't very good, though. Everybody used to drink the wines, preferably, to the beer. Beer was watery stuff. Like that in change, you know, and they're all tuppence eightness and threepence. You had a pile of notes for your pound note.
Were they good value for money, the estaminets?
Well, I suppose it was, yes. French people, because the rate of exchange, you put down a pound in the ESC, that's the Expeditionary Force Canteen, what is the NAFI now, but I say for a tin of woodbines. Than the ordinary thing. Well, I was smoking myself to death at the time. Well, when I got it, put it, always used to load up at the canteen, you know, just behind the line, take up. Smoke it, anything. Of course, of a night time in the front line, we couldn't get any much fuel up. The old dog biscuits, they used to come in tins about that big, you know.
Warm,
have a nice fire in the front line. Of course, if there was an attack on or raid or anything like that, you wouldn't have time for that. You'd be warm enough without that.
Back to the estaminets.
But yes, used to send you down, have a couple of days there, and come back again. And of course, as time went on,